Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again, episode number 64 of Material Issues. I'm Mark Hirschberger, Pop Detective Records. I'm over here on the East Coast, so we got to cover the other side of the country. Joining me from the West Coast, president of the International Pop Overthrow Festival, and my good friend, Mr. David Bash. How are you doing tonight, David?
I'm doing okay, Mark. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We got a break in the heat over here in the East Coast. We were down to a balmy 92 degrees today. So I was had a little jacket on, had a hat, walking the dog, you know, getting a little chilly. So, yeah, crazy.
Yeah, you East Coast pussies, I'm telling you. Now, we've been at 100 the last week, but of course it's 100.
It's a dry heat.
Humidity, though.
Yeah, it's a dry heat.
20% humidity, and you have 70% humidity, so big difference.
Yeah, literally, I can walk down the street and just drip water. It's just so humid.
Yeah, this I know. Three, I remember. I grew up there. I know.
This is three straight weeks of like an average of 95 degrees, which has been just stifling. So
how's Chez holding up?
You know what? Chez loves it. He doesn't go very fast, but he likes to go slow. And I'll say we're going to go a block. And he knows that when his internal compass, when I start going back towards the house, he goes the opposite direction. So even though he's hot, I carry water, he's hydrated, he just likes to chill out underneath the shade tree and let me bake as I stand there. And it's all good. No. Barry
Thank loves you, Barry. Oh, Barry's has his name up now. Good for you, Barry.
Oh, Joanne.
Hey, Joanne. Yes, you did. My good friend Joanne Hodges.
Nice to see you.
Not Gil's daughter. No relation.
Hey, you know, David's got a great shirt, but you can't. Marvin Barry and the Starlighters. That's my T-shirt of the night. People got to love that.
You guys aren't ready for that yet.
You guys aren't ready for that T-shirt yet.
That's a great shirt.
Sure. Awesome.
Now, let's do a little check here. My watch check today. I've got my...
Oh, shit.
Now, this is my Mont Blanc Heritage salmon-colored dial. Oh, really? Wow.
You were wrong, David. Look at that.
I did not know that, Joanne.
I love the salmon-colored dial.
It's hard to see in this light, but it's the best-looking salmon color I ever had. And it's got that 50s vibe. It looks like something that Don Draper from Mad Men would have worn.
You know what? It looks like something that D.B. Cooper would have worn.
There you go. Anyway, this is one I don't wear too often, but with this shirt, because it's got the salmon in the shirt, I
love it.
I tend to wear. Yeah, it's one of my faves for sure. I've got that. I got my Mountain Dew Spark flavored zero sugar, so we're all set there.
Oh, I didn't bring props. Gosh darn it!
Oh my god. So unprepared.
Let's see.
What has come my way in the past week or so? Well,
hi, Deb. I'm just saying hi to Deb. Deb from Tucson.
Hey, Deb. Yes, my good friend Deb. Nice. Very good to see all these people. My coterie of female fans are here. More like a coat closet than a coterie. And I kind of wish they weren't here this week because I've been eating so many of those potato chips. My face is as fat as a motherfucker right now.
It's my fault. And speaking of that, before you go into that, you know, in a future episode, we will be taste testing some awesome potato chips live here on Material Issues. Some strangely awesome. So, yeah, stay tuned for that later on. What do you got brand new, Dave?
Well, this is something I should have gotten when it was only $300, but I balked on it, and now I had to pay more. But it is the Gentle Giant Unburied Treasures 36 disc box set. Yeah,
crazy. Number one, the artwork is beautiful, obviously, but 36 CDs. Hey, Andy. Hey, Gary.
36 CDs and also paraphernalia. A really nice book. Yeah, I wasn't going to bring it over here because it's too unwieldy and everything would fall out. But
now, in all honesty, though, 36 discs.
The answer is no. Whatever you're going to ask. No, I'll never get through the 36 CDs.
It's a nice thing to have.
It's a piece of art, and it's a nice thing to have.
Right.
And If you had told 1977 me that I would have this box set, I would have looked at you like you were from Mars. Because when I first heard Gentle Giant, I did not like them at all. I could not deal with Derek Shulman's voice. It was way, way too quirky, for lack of a better term. And I just wasn't into it. But then a year later, they had that hit Words from the Wise.
Yes.
And that was much catchier. And I thought, wow, you know, maybe I gave them short shrift. So anyway, it took a few years, but I finally started to listen to the early stuff. And I was like, wow, I like this. This is really good melodic prog. So
that might be something for a future episode. We talk about bands that when you first heard them, or artists, you were like, no. And then it came back, could be years later. And you all of a sudden you went, holy cow, where was I when you know, because so much, we've talked about this before, so many times things will hit you because it's all time, place, mood, you're feeling. And
there's so many external factors that affect how you're going to like certain things. I don't think that's going to happen, Tim. Thank you for the thought.
Yeah, the next 36 episodes of Material Issues, we will be covering one disc per episode. Of Gentle Giant. Oh Lord.
So that was pretty cool.
Is that one of the biggest box sets ever made? Or
this is a company called Madfish, who's from Holland, who's been doing these box sets. They just did an Al Stewart box, which I have, that also has about the same number of discs. And there's gonna be a Horse Slips. If you remember them, there's going to be a box on them. And there's going to be a Four Seasons box that they're doing, which may have even more discs. I forgot. I think that one's supposed to come out in September or October. I'm looking forward to that. No, I mean, there have been bigger box. I mean, they didn't have all the accoutrements, but there have been bigger box sets. I have a Johnny Cash box that has like 60 discs in it, but it's only the discs. So it's much smaller in size.
Well, and of course,
the Dylan boxes has that many, at least.
The Elvis box that like 60 discs or something.
Yeah. So the ones that just have the discs, that's a lot more doable. But when you want to include like books and posters and show programs and all that stuff, then it becomes, like I said earlier, a bit unwieldy. So you're not going to be able to fit more than like 30 something discs. But I'm looking forward to that Four Seasons one I love the band, and there's supposed to be tons of unreleased stuff. And yeah, it should be pretty cool.
That'd be incredible.
Another thing that came by my way is, and I know there's some people here aren't going to care, but I think you do, looking up some baseball cards on eBay, I discovered that there was a set that came out last year called the Anniversary Chrome Set, which has 700 cards, and it is in it uses the design of the 52 top set, which is iconic. And here's a page from it. I don't know how well you can see through all that light.
No, it looks good. Yeah.
This is a superstar page. It looks really good. I don't think we could possibly do it justice. The photos are amazing. The chrome, the veneer is really nice. It starts out with all rookies, and they throw in like one older player, like every 50 cards. I don't get it. Then it kind of morphs into just like starters, and then it morphs into superstars like this page. And then later on, it changes yet again into Hall of Famers.
Mm. Wow.
And you know, obviously you've got Babe and Lou right up there on top, and I mean, this has to be the best page, and Willie. So there, it's the best page. So anyway, and 700 cards is absolutely gorgeous.
And you can't buy that as a complete set. You hired a series of like grade school kids to buy these packs individually and create the set for you, didn't you?
I wish, because I'd be able to get a lot more sets. Cream spit. Oh, yeah, there you go. I like that. All right. Well, yeah, that's another thing. Sometimes when you're a kid, you're not ready to hear certain artists. Yeah. You're not, your tastes haven't matured enough. And then when you get older, you know, then it's more ripe for it. But anyway, no, those are not sets that are made in a factory. You have to buy a whole bunch of boxes, pull cards from those boxes and put together sets. It's really hard to do. It takes a lot of work and a lot of expense, but you know, they end up charging a decent amount for them. And I couldn't resist this one though. It was just way too beautiful.
I saw a picture today on Instagram on some baseball thing that I follow for cards and collecting. And somebody had laid out on a table all in the sealed rating, you know, cubes, a complete set of T205 cards minus one card.
Well, oh no, that's T205. So that's not the Hannes Wagner card.
No, I don't know what card was. He said short one card, but it was a giant table. All laid out. He finally got to that point, and I was just like, "Oh, you know, that's amazing. That's amazing."
I know. Well, there's a whole bunch of history involved.
Besides, we're also collectible.
Let's not turn off everyone who doesn't like baseball here, which is probably most of our guests. And let's start to get back into music, which of course we all love. Yeah. I want to play some more stuff from the this year's IPO compilation, Volume 23. Which, if you were at IPOLA, you probably got one. And I will also be giving them away in San Francisco next week when we're there. But if you're not at either of those events, you can pre-order it on the Omnivore Recordings website, Omnivore being our label. And I urge you to do that because the last couple of volumes sold out through the pre-orders. So if you want one, you know, there it is. Go and get it. To Paul McCartney and Badfinger. But anyway, I want to play some stuff from disc three. Here's an artist from Italy. He goes under the name Sunborn Road, Sunborne. And this is a track called Dear Joe, which is, yeah, it's pretty Beatlesque, I would say. I think you'll like it. Here we go. I hope. Is that loud enough? Certainly has that sort of early 1970s, 71 album vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, I dig it. And that's what's the artist again?
Goes under the name Sunborn RD, which is short for Road, I would assume. Yeah. His actual name is Alessandro. He's from Italy. And hopefully we'll have him at IPO Liverpool next year. Yeah, Cool Cat actually put out a compilation of his stuff.
Oh, really? I didn't see it.
I would highly recommend it.
I'll have to look at Cool Cat for that. But man, you got a lot of great stuff on this 3 CD set.
Yeah, that's very nice.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you like that song, check out the Sunborn Road compilation
on Cool Cat
put out.
And that's K-O-O-L-K-A-T.
Absolutely. Cool Cat. We had Ray from Cool Cat on Material Issues a couple of weeks ago.
Earlier show, yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's another track, and this may polarize some people. I don't know. It's a little bit different from what we've had on the... Ooh, what do we got there?
Oh, I just... Ed McMahon, he's calling. I won the Publisher's Clearinghouse. Thank you. I've been licking all those stamps and sending it in for 45 years.
Now, like I said, when the IRS comes and gets you, you'll be left with about $3.
So. That's all right. That's $3 more than I had.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I guess it's worth it after all. All right. Well, here's a track by the absolutely effervescent Mr. Morty Shalman. You know Morty, I think. Yep. I don't know if you've met him, but he's
never met him.
Originally from Chicago, has lived in LA now for about 20 years or so, a little more. He's a guy who epitomizes the term money. If you remember money from Swingers, you're money and you don't even know it. Well, Morty's always known it. And he's always dressed in that sort of dapper way and always carried himself in that way too. And he's put out some great music over the years. And he's going to be reissuing his debut album later in the year with some bonus stuff. So that should be cool. But here's a newer track that he's put on. And it's a little bit different. You'll hear it. All I can say is you may not like certain parts of it, but one thing will be undeniable. You will love the hook. It'll stay in your head. Rena says this is the one track that she can't stop hearing in her head. Huh? So this is Morty Shalman, and it's called Party All Night on Sunset, and it name checks a lot of clubs out here. So here we go.
Strip in my daddy's jag, sneaking shots of Jack from your Hermes bag, laughing at the hookers in their black thigh high from the LED starlight in their eyes, flipping off the tourists in their Venice tees, staring back at us like we're royals, please, all the while we're blasting rock radio, it's the beat of our dreams, here we go, go, go!
Do you have the Valley Lodge albums?
Yes.
It reminds me a lot of what they... what Dave Hill from Valley Lodge was doing.
Yep. I agree.
We sink into the piper for some indie band. Rock onto the Roxy, but there's barely room to stand. So it's over to the rainbow for an old
school. Morton Abel, too. Do you know Morton Abel?
I don't.
So we slip into the boys and the
power. Reminds me of him, too.
Product from these rockabilly pros. Next thing I know is you're taking off your clothes. I guess you really like me. Here we go.
Okay. Can't really see, but oh, there we go. Oh, Morton Abel. Okay.
Yeah.
Like Morty. Okay.
Like Morty.
The Norwegian way of saying it, I suppose.
Right. I love the fact that I can reach for CDs right here.
I know, it's great.
But I would like it like my dry cleaner. Where I can hit a button and everything comes around on a...
kind of like a real-life jukebox for your CDs.
Yeah. Well, that would be cool. Especially if his voice activated. Another great track on this 3CD set, man.
I really like it. It took me a few times, but
it's got a great groove to it. You just groove, you know. I could drive with this music. This is a good driving music.
little bit of a fade.
And there's a follow-up question for you. Whenever you talked about name-dropping places in LA and things like that, and we've had this conversation in previous episodes, but you are, and you've admitted this, you're not a lyrics guy first and foremost. You're the music and the melody and whatnot.
Sound of the lyrics, yes. The way they flow, yeah.
But I was thinking about you saying that as I was walking the dog earlier today, because I forget what I was listening to, but I was listening to first Miracle Bra album.
Oh. Life on
the Next, right? But I had to listen to that for in such a long time, but all the lyrics, I was singing out loud as I was walking down the street. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I associate so much with lyrics. I sing lyrics. I think of lyrics as a whole part of it. And I thought, how can David not be that into the lyrics?
Well, I'm into them rhythmically. I can sing songs mechanically. I'm not really thinking about what they mean.
But see, now that's the other side. I do. I listen to things and you know and. I don't know, for whatever reason, yeah, I associate stuff with what the lyrics are saying. But it's just something came to my head.
I mean, look, there are certain lyrics that do resonate, that do get through that whatever barrier my unconscious mind is putting up. And those are usually those kind of adolescent clever lyrics like Sparks or 10cc. Those lyrics I heard from the get-go and knew what they meant and thought they were funny.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, that sort of adolescent cleverness, I call it, that both those bands had. I that kind of stuff I generally, that makes it through. But otherwise, it doesn't. And in some cases I'm probably better off actually not knowing what they mean.
Probably. Probably.
Yeah. All right. I gotta stop eating the potato chips. I swear to God, look at this squeeze. Squeeze in. Come on. In a few weeks, you'll see a thinner face. I guarantee it. No, I shouldn't guarantee anything like that.
Don't ever guarantee anything. In a few weeks, we're going to have another chip episode.
No, that's right. Forget it.
Forget it. You got to wait for a while.
I'm going to die fat and happy, I guess. Somebody just said hi, fellas. I don't know who it is, but identify yourself, please.
Hello. David and I were just playing. David was playing some songs from the new IPO 3 CD set. Omnivore Recordings, you can get that online, pre-order. It comes out in September, right, David?
It comes out in September, but if you happen to be at IPO San Francisco next week,
there we go.
Thursday through Saturday, August 18th through 20th at Hotel Utah, you'll get a free one with a free admission.
Free 3 CD set. I mean, that for any, if you're an hour and a half away, that's worth the drive to San Francisco. Go to an IPO show and pick and get this. Look at that.
Get this and see some amazing bands. So
see some amazing bands.
Come up and check it out. If not, if you can't, then go to omnivorerecordings.com and pre-order it before it sells out. Hey, Phil Angotti.
Good Phil, to see you. Nice to see you. Yeah,
well, maybe I wasn't supposed to say his last name because he only put A.
So it could be any. It could be any.
That's true. It may, you know what? It's not Phil Angotti. It's Phil Alvarado. Oh, there you go. Richie. Great. Yeah. Awesome. It'll be great to meet you. Been looking forward to it ever since I've heard your music. let's see. Anyway, let's just play one more and then let's wax philosophic.
We will.
We do Stump the Bash. But
yeah, anyway. Hang on, everybody. We got the second episode of Stump the Bash tonight. It's going to be a good one.
I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I don't bomb quite as much as last week. But anyway, here's a track by a really cool power pop band from Boston called Glowbox. They played IPO a few times. We'll be doing so again in November. And they released a really good album last year, CD. Made my top 10, in fact. Here's a track from it called Test of Time. Some old age people living in a world that they can't understand.
I used to walk home every night, singing songs to myself with a blue moon right by.
And they can pull off those vocals live also, which is very impressive. Tracks like this, it's really cool.
Yeah, if you can't dig something like this, there's something wrong.
They said they can pull it off live.
Yeah. That was the Glow Box.
Glow Box, and the album is called Your Call Is Very Important to Us. These vocals, yeah, they are. And they
love it.
They can pull them off live.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's all available in the 3-CD set. Get it at IPO San Francisco coming up.
Or online at
Omnivore Recordings. Yep.
Yeah. And yeah. Bob Overthrow, Volume 23. Thank you, Andy.
Great set.
Oh, Andy, have you received your CDs yet? I sent them out last Tuesday, the same day. The U.S. artists have received them. Talked to Lisa M. lately. Yeah, whenever she's on, she's been listening in. I really wanted her on today because I was going to play a track from a different compilation that she in particular would really appreciate. So if Lisa, if you're here, identify yourself because I'll play it. Andy, have you gotten your IPO CDs yet? Not yet? All right. Well, it's probably going to take, 8 days? Yeah, they said it might take between 10 and 15. So you know how the mail is now, Andy, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll show up soon. Definitely let me know when they do. But anyway, as Mark and I were speaking on the phone a few days ago, and Mark brought up a really good question. So we're going to wax a bit philosophical now. Go ahead and tell everyone what you thought of.
Well, I've actually kind of expounded the question a little bit, or expanded the question a little bit. We were talking about Olivia Newton-John and some artists that have passed recently, and if you found out the way she's been battling cancer, but if you found out that you had a short period of time to live and it was definite, what would you do with that period of time, knowing your health would quickly start to deteriorate, and some things that you might want to do you'd have to do kind of in the near future and get it done. But I want to start that off though with saying, how different do you think the human race would be if we were all born with an expiration date, as if this was a cool sci-fi movie where, exactly 70 years to the second after you're born, you're done.
I assume we would know this because yes, we would know this ahead of time, because otherwise, in a sense, we do have an expiration date.
But this you would know ahead of time, and pending an accident or something, your body would actually make it to 70. And how different do you think we would all be, especially in the final moments? But you know, the big question was, what would you do if you were told, you know, you got about 3 months, and you know, maybe 6 weeks of that's going to be healthy. You know, what would you do?
That was going to be my first question. How is this terminal time you have left? How is your health affected? In other words, will you have time or the ability to do what you want to do until the last day?
Well, that's just it. You know that if you have 3 months, there's going to be a point where you're going to start going downhill, so you won't have extreme health. But for the near future, you would. Let's just assume that you've got a healthy enough 6 weeks or so before you really can't go anywhere or do anything. What would be on your bucket list that you'd want to do or?
Well, the first part of the exactly. No kidding. That goes for a lot of us. To answer the first part of your question, like how would people behave if they knew when they were going to die? I guess it would depend on what age it was, and you know, how much life could they fit into that period. I think if, let's say, I knew I was going to live until 75, I probably would have lived my life a lot like I'm living it now. And then as I got nearer to that date, I would make sure that I crammed in everything that I needed to do. So in a sense, I don't think it would, knowing when I was going to die, I don't know that it would affect what exactly I would do, but it would certainly affect when. And so I guess that dovetails into the basic essence of the question, which is, what would you do? I think if I had 6 months and maybe had 4 of those months to actually do what I needed to do, well, one thing I would do is I would try to do IPO in certain cities that I haven't done. I'd say, screw it. Let's go to Australia. Let's go to, let's go to Sydney, Melbourne. Let's go to Tokyo. Let's go to Madrid. Let's just do that. That way I'll get to see those places also. And, you know, obviously I wouldn't be worried about whether or not I had to make a living, how much money I would make. I would just do it.
But that's interesting in that, you know, people would understand how much IPO and putting these festivals on means to you. That's big. That's a big answer to this question, is that you would go and hold this festival in places you've never been before.
Yeah, places that I really can't afford at this point, either time-wise or financially. Another thing I would try to do is, and this is all apart from like, well, you know, I have a wife who I love. Obviously, I don't want to be away from home. I mean, hopefully she would go with me to these things so that I could spend as much time of my last days with her. But another thing I would want to do is I would want to go visit some of my good friends around the world. Some, you know, like you, who I've, you know, obviously met many times, and some who I've never met, and just spend a little time with them and, you know, maybe say goodbye. Then go to the next one. So I would want to do those things. I didn't dwell on this too much. I wanted the answers to kind of be more organic, but that's kind of what I would come up with. How about you?
Well, yeah, I thought about it after we said, you know, what would we do? I was kicking it around. And I think first and foremost, what I would do is I would get my daughters, because at that point, if you knew, money was no object, because you would just max out your credit cards and then call to let the estate worry about it. But
you have stuff for people to leave things to. I don't.
Well, I mean, you know, they'll have to sell everything to pay off all the debts that I rack up in the last 3 months anyway. So it doesn't really matter. But now, you know, I think I would take my daughters for a week and go to like the fjords of Norway, where there's some overlooks of some of the most beautiful scenery. And I think I would like have picnics every day and sit overlooking this vast beauty and explain to them how they should enjoy every moment. Or as Warren Zevon said on Letterman Show, enjoy every sandwich. Right. Because it absolutely is true. And I think I would sit there for a week and just tell them about everything in my life that's meant anything, and the people and the places, and just so they knew my entire story without any reservations, you know? And then after that, I think visit places I've always wanted to see, some unbelievably breathtaking places in the world that you'd be like, well, I can't swing it financially now, or, you know, you got too many other things going on. At that point, it wouldn't matter. And I think I'd like to see some things that are breathtaking before I take my last breath. Yeah.
Yeah. How about maybe? Yeah, there you go. Yes, you should, Andy. No doubt.
Indeed.
Would there be some women in your life that maybe you hadn't approached where at this point you'd say, you know, I want to go out with a smile on my face?
No, there'd be no women that I haven't. Yeah, or I always wanted to approach, but I'll tell you what, I would not be afraid to approach anybody at that point.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you might as well have a little fun, right?
Yeah, you know that, but you know what? We've discussed this too, you know, between you and I off air and things, but I've discussed it with my brother a couple years younger. He's also divorced. You get to a point in life where the beauty or the physical or whatnot really isn't the most important thing in the world. And you understand that at a time, maybe, you know, everything like that meant a lot, but you get to a point in life, especially if you saw, you know, the end was, you know, approaching, I don't think anything along those lines would really truly matter, you know?
Wow. That is really deep. And ladies, he's single.
Yeah.
So if you're weeping at the depth and of the absolute goodness of what he said,
and of course the ten rescue dogs I would get immediately, all my little doggies, right?
How do you think it would affect you emotionally? I've been thinking about that, especially since, you know, and I don't mean to be overly dramatic. I was very close to death when I had my first heart attack. According to my cardiologist, if I had arrived at the hospital 2 hours later, I wouldn't be speaking with you right now. It doesn't feel like that, but apparently that's the way it was. If I were told by a doctor like you, I don't know, you have some ailment and it's going to kill you in a few months, I don't know that it would devastate me, honestly. I think I would have some perspective. You know, I'd realize what I'd be missing, but in some ways the pressure would be off also.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of stress in my life. Admittedly, much of it is self-imposed, but I've not learned how to handle it effectively. So in some ways it would be kind of a relief. I would feel very bad for Rena because, you know, she would have to be without me, and that would be my biggest devastation probably.
But as you far know what?
As I'm concerned personally, I think, you know, again, I would do what I wanted to do, the things I mentioned, and I would probably be able to come to grips with it. And
in reality, if you think about it, much of the anxiety of not being, so to speak, is missing things that you don't even know you would miss, things that don't even exist yet, and yet you get anxious over the fact that, well, I won't see this, or I won't live to see this, or I've never been here. I've never been, you know, all that is just your mind, you know, playing the games on you, with things that aren't even there. You know, yesterday is gone. Today is happening. We have no clue what 5 minutes from now is going to hold. So, you know, you just kind of, you just be in the now. That's it.
Well, hopefully 5 minutes from now we'll hold Stump the Bash, because we should probably move on to that, because that takes a few minutes.
Here's two other questions for you, though.
All right.
I know you like pickles. Do you have Trader Joe's out there on the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. I think everybody in the
dill pickle mustard. I don't know if you put mustard on anything.
I'm not a big mustard guy.
Okay.
If there were like dots of mustard on my hot dog, I could probably handle it. I don't think I'd want it slathered on
anything. This is mustard that has pieces of dill pickle in it. It's so good. It's unreal.
I would try it. I'm not optimistic that I would love that, but I wouldn't refuse.
And I was pining the other day over the fact that Lee and Perrins, the Worcestershire sauce, as we've talked about on potato chips and things. Thank you, Adele, the singer Adele, with the tip I read about Worcestershire sauce on potato chips. They used to make, as far as I knew, a steak sauce. It was called Lee and Perrins Bold. It was thick.
Well, yeah, I remember that.
It disappeared from the shelves here a couple of years ago, and I was just so upset.
I know.
For whatever reason, I went online the other day. It exists. And I got like a 3-bottle pack sent to me. And I figured, you know what? I'm going to get this. And the expiration date's going to be 2 years ago, you know? But no, it doesn't expire till June of 2023.
It's like the roach of state, roaches of state sauce. DC tuna, I can handle a certain amount of mayo and tuna, but like spreading it on some sandwich, forget it. I'm not like those people in Undercover Brother. I can't eat it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is time. This is the second time we're doing this. It's a new segment that we're calling Stump the Bash. We even have a logo for it. People say, what is Stump the Bash? If you didn't see it last week, essentially what we do is we take 1965 through 1975. It is the Billboard year-end Hot 100. That doesn't mean the exact 1 through 100 as they came in at the very end of the year. It could be a song that carried the top of the charts for 2 weeks, but depending on how long it stayed on the chart, the Billboard Hot 100 at the end ranked them. So last week we had, what did we take?
Number 17.
Mm-hmm. I got a little less foggy here. There we go. So what I did, David picks a year. And between 65 and 75, and I give him clues to that chart position. And if he gets on the first clue, it's 5 points. The fifth clue, he gets 1 point. He picks five of those 11-year sections. And this segment tonight is chart position number 6.
Whoa. We're talking about some of the biggest hits of that.
So now it's going to be a little bit easier.
It might be easier because
there are some that I can tell you are easier.
A song that finishes number 6 for the year was obviously number 1 for a few weeks.
Right.
Not necessarily in the city in which you lived back then.
Right.
Because there were regional hits.
And some of these I can tell you right now are easier because the clues aren't that great because there wasn't a whole lot of backstory. Better when the track has some backstory and you go, whoa.
Loop with a few of those last week.
Yeah, DC Tune, if you could send us a theme song, that'd be great. We do need a theme song for Stump the Bash.
I'm sure there are plenty of people listening who are qualified to do that. So
yeah, anybody want to help us out with that?
Yeah, we'll take some auditions.
David, what year are you going to attempt? And as I said, his goal is to get 15 points, which means with 5 years, he needs to average a 3 or getting it within 3 questions in order to make 15 points and win Stump the Bash.
And you've designed these clues so that the first clues are harder than the last.
Generally. Well, as I said, some of these years, the clues are pretty, like, if you don't get it on the first one, then we're just done.
No vocals, but that's okay.
All right, what year are you looking at to start off, David? Here we are with Stump the Bash.
Well, last week I chose some of my favorite years, the ones that I actually grew up with. And this time I'm going to pick 5 different years, just to keep it fair.
Keep it fair.
And we'll start with 1968.
Ooh, 1968.
I did not listen. I was not really listening to the radio back then, so I don't have much memory of the time period. But I do know charts, so maybe I'll be able to get this.
All right, you may hit a home run right off the bat here. All right, let's give it. Here's clue number 1 for 5 points. Chart position number 6, year end 1968. with elements of hard rock, psychedelia, and pop. This track was based on a distinctive bass riff developed by the bass player after attending a Hendrix concert.
Now, I'm not a musician, so I don't necessarily identify with that. But I will just take a wild stab and say Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf.
No.
Oh, and by the way, people, if you know the answers, do not write them down.
Oh, yes. Do not comment on the answers until we've answered that question, because yeah, so David might
sneak you very well might get it before me, so I don't want to. Yeah, so
all right,
we don't want any answers.
Let me read through. Here we go. Number clue number two for 4 points. The band's American label, ATCO, was initially unsure of the song's potential, but other ATCO artists of the time highly recommended it. The single became this band's first and highest charting American single. It was only a modest hit in the UK.
ATCO, huh? Sunshine of Your Love by Cream.
4 points. 4 points for David Bash. He starts off, stumped the band right out of the gates. 4 points. Sunshine of Your Love by Cream in 1968. Jimi Hendrix also performed a faster instrumental version of the song live, often dedicating the performance to Cream. Song was released in 1968 in the UK, shortly after the band announced they were breaking up. And the track was number two on their album, Disraeli Gears.
It's amazing that they announced they were breaking up, and yet there were two more albums that came out.
That's part of Stump the Band. That's so much fun. Not only are Stump the Bash, not only are we trying to stump David Bash, but you learn some interesting things here on Material Issues about these tracks.
Yeah, I did not know anything about the bass line. It makes sense now, but that was no clue to me.
No, you had to be good to get 5 points there, but you came out of the gates with four points. You only need 11 more points. What's your second year, David?
All right, let's go with 1975.
Ooh, 1975.
Our final year.
All right. This might be an easy one for you. I don't know. 1975, chart position number six. This track was originally written by John Ellison and recorded by his group Soul Brothers Six in 1967.
Oh, my God. So it's probably a soul hit. There were plenty of soul hits in 1975, of course.
I like the way your mind's thinking.
But something as big as that. Yeah. See, that's a year where I don't really know the charts that well. But then again, I do. The Hustle by Van McCoy.
No, not correct.
I'm going to guess that because that's an instrumental.
Anyway. You know, I can't give you easy clues right off the bat.
You shouldn't be.
Yeah, I know.
That's the idea.
All right, let's see. 4 points. Clue number two, 1975, chart position number six. It was recorded for their album titled All the Girls in the World Beware.
Oh, my God. All right. It's a blue-eyed soul song. And I believe this song is Bad Time by Grand Funk.
No.
No. Oh.
Well, you can't. You're done. That's your guess.
All right.
Four points out the window. Out the window. Although I love that song, Bad Time. That's a great song. Yeah, great song. Clue number three for 3 points. This song appeared in the video game Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
That I wouldn't know that from Adam. I never played that. But now I'm going to say...
But you can guess. You could still guess.
I'm going to say Some Kind of Wonderful by Grand Theft. Okay.
You were right there.
Bad Time is on all the... I don't even remember, which is pretty disgusting because I do have the Grand Funk albums from that period. But here's the thing. I got into albums really late. I did not get my first proper album until I was 16, which is, now I have I have more albums than God. But back then, it was just recording songs off of the radio.
Right, right.
I... I don't think I bought All the Girls in the World Beware right away. But I'm pretty sure Bad Time is on their next album. So, all right, some kind of wonderful.
Hey, listen, you got 3 points. So you're still ahead of the average. You're averaging 3.5 points.
Were you going to ask anything about, were you going to say it became a title of an iconic 80s film?
No. The B side was a track called Wild.
Yeah, B-sides are going to usually throw me because I didn't necessarily have the single. Yes. And if I did, I might not remember the B-side. But anyway, all right, so I've got 7.
You're at 7 out of 15. You're in great shape right now. You can skate for the next 3 songs and, you know, be all right.
I can't really skate. if I get what, 5 on the next one, then I can skate.
Then you can skate. What year are we going with?
Well, now I'm going to take a tougher one for me. Or at least on the surface, but we don't know. 1965. You know, I was only 6 years old for most of that year. So,
yeah. Well, that could present a problem. However,
good, but I certainly know a lot of the songs from that year. So, And we're talking about number 6. God, some kind of I'm thinking about some kind of wonderful was number 6 for the year. Wow.
Yeah.
Wasn't nearly that big in New York, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, here we go. 1965. Year-end chart position number 6. This song was written and produced by Tony Hatch. Reached number 1 on Billboard, number 2 on the UK singles chart.
I'm going to go with Downtown by Petula Clark.
5 points. You are way ahead of the curve. That one, I think I had a feeling you were going to hit it right out of the park right away.
It's not. Why are we talking about Spirit in the Sky? I'm not picking 1970 anyway. So if that happens to be the number 6 song for the year, we're just never going to know.
You're already at 12 points out of 15 now.
Now I can skate a little bit. I only need 3 over out of the next 2. But yeah.
And the reason I thought you were going to get that right away, because it was already deep in your mind from that. What was the movie we were just talking about? But
what? Some Kind of Wonderful?
No. Downtown.
What was
the movie we just saw a month ago that we loved so much? That murder mystery going back in time. She sang Downtown.
What? Oh, right. I can't think of the name. Really disturbing one. Yeah.
I forgot
his name already.
I forget. Anyhow, Downtown.
No, I totally blocked that out. So no.
All right. Here we go. You could finish it all here on year number 4. All you need is
I'll
3.
I'll still want year number 5.
I know. I do. You can go past 15 and really blow it out of the park.
All right. So let's see. What have I chosen? 68, 75, and 65. So let's cross those out. So I have 3 years left to choose from if I don't repeat from last week.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with 1969.
1969 it is.
That's near the end of that year is when I started listening to WABC in New York reasonably heavily. And for that year, WABC had their top 100, 69. It wasn't of 1969. It was top 100, 69. And then in 1970, they had their heavy 100 of 1970. We need to get that word back into our vernacular, heavy, and not heavy. Meaning somebody overweight.
Yeah.
Meaning something that's deep and important. And
that makes me think of He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
Right, you know? Exactly.
That's fantastic.
I'm not sure why you can't be both. Why can't
I don't
you
know why you can't be both.
I mean, does that mean he's kind of Zen? I don't know. And why does he have to be Zen? If he's his brother, he could be an intense, heavy brother.
He could be.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive, in other words. So I would assume, I think maybe Terry Sylvester and Alan Clark wrote that together. So to you guys, I say, think again. All right.
It's Marvin, your cousin, Marvin Berry. All right, here we go. 1969 is a great one. Chart position number 6, year-end Billboard Hot 100. Co-written by the artist and Freddie Weller. Recorded with backing from the Wrecking Crew. Reached number 1 for 4 weeks in the U.S. Billboard chart and 1 week in the UK singles chart.
Well, that should be enough to give me the clue as to what it was, but it's not ringing a bell right now. But let's go with Dizzy by Tommy Roe.
Knocked it out of the park.
Whoa.
Dizzy, Tommy Roe. And that, I wasn't sure because I always associate Dizzy and Tommy Roe as if it was recorded in 1966. I don't know why 69.
You're thinking of Hooray for Hazel or Sweet Pea or something.
But. Sweet Pea. Yeah, it could be. But for some reason, I always think 1969 is too late for Dizzy. But it was certainly not.
I mean, once I heard Freddie Weller, I was thinking, of course, the Paul Revere and the Raiders. But I knew they didn't have any hits that big. Yeah, Dizzy was a huge hit in New York, too. It was big everywhere.
That song for me is very iconic because for whatever reason, it takes me right back to riding in my parents. They had like a Chrysler Imperial. It was basically a boat on wheels. And, of course, the big bench seats in the front and the back. Never wore seatbelts and whatnot, but I can remember that song being on the radio all the time when I was like 8 years old.
Sure.
And I just loved it.
It's a great, great song. It certainly deserved its chart position.
We would have said it was covered by artists such as Boney M., Reckless Eric, Billy J. Kramer. 1991 cover by Vic Reeves and the Wonder Stuff reached number one in the UK single
charts. I remember that now.
The B-side was The You I Need. Very cool. It, of course, had you gone all the way down to the number one clue, I could have said he also had a number one hit with Sheila. So
yeah, I think that would have given that. I wouldn't given it away. Nothing else did.
But David, you are already at 17 points. You have not been stumped tonight.
At 17 by Janice Ian, which was a big 17. Hit in 1975. But we know that's not number six because we already did that year.
Now, if you can somehow get into the 20-point range, you're going to be in rare air, so to speak, as far as this stump.
Well, we'll see how rare it is in subsequent episodes, because maybe maybe 20 will be the norm for me. I don't know.
You don't know.
One of those things. I'm not going to get cocky though. Last week I really blew the first three.
Hey, there was a lot of pressure last week. Yeah. A lot of pressure.
Plus, number six is a little easier than number 17 because we are talking about bigger hits. Hopefully, next time is it going to be any position within the top 100?
Yes.
So next time it could be number 92, and that
could be. And that would be
a lot tougher.
That would make it a lot tougher.
Hopefully, we do get a lower number like that or higher number, depending on how you look at it.
But the thing is, you know, I don't look at the songs on positions and try to and say that'd be a good song. I just pick a position and then I go from there. So I don't even know what
But I'm not talking about music.
Yeah, and I've heard that you don't know where to go from there.
I'm talking about the position I'm in when eating potato chips. Anyway,
Dizzy, only record my brother bought me as a child. Yeah. See,
that's one thing I love, people's memories about. Yes, I am DC Tune. In fact, I was going to suggest to Mark do a Stump the Bash for baseball.
Oh, I might do that.
In those same years, 66 to 75.
We might have a bonus question. Maybe we'll have a bonus question, which is baseball 65 to 67.
That's right in my wheelhouse.
Last Night in Soho. Thank you, Andy. That's the movie, Last Night in Soho.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course, the Dave D. Dozy Beaky Mick and Tit song, which was really huge in the UK and not a dent in the US chart.
Not a dent in the US chart.
It should have been.
All right.
You're getting a little fuzzy there, Mark.
I'm always fuzzy. There we go. What year are you taking to try to break the 20 mark?
All right. Well, we have three eligible years, 69, 72, and 74. Let's go with 72.
1972. Let's see if David can crack the 20 mark. All right.
Tough one.
I'm going to say this could be tough. I'm just going to say that.
All right, good.
Because I think I had a hard time. Here we go. 1972. Finished chart position number six. Originally intended for King Floyd. This recording's B-side was A Mother's Prayer.
Huh. King Floyd had the hit Groove Me right at the end of 70 into early 71. I don't know a whole lot more about him, but I would assume, and again, I'm
a little freaked that you knew that one too, Groovy. Yeah.
Well, I know Groove Me from hearing it. And I know when it came out, but King Floyd. All right.
So this was originally intended for King Floyd.
I'm going to guess this one actually is a dark-eyed soul guy, just for lack of a better word. The first one was not, even though it seemed like it should be. But I could be wrong. Okay, number six, 1972. I'm thinking of a few dark-eyed soul guys who had hits had big hits that year.
Big what?
One of which is not something I would think King Floyd would do, but one of the other of which may be something he would do. So I'm going to go with If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right by Luther Ingram.
And you're not right.
Okay.
That was a great guess, though. Great guess. All right. Clue number two. Clue number two for 4 points. Mostly spoken in a form of an early rap song.
Mostly spoken. And this was number six, huh?
Yeah.
Why am I not remember? Maybe it isn't a dark-eyed soul guy. Number six and mostly spoken.
This is tough.
Yeah. Well, it should be easy, and I'm sure there are other people out there who know what this is already, but I'm spoken in a rap kind of way.
I'll tell you this much. I was surprised that it ended the year number six overall, put it that way.
You didn't think it was that big?
No.
And maybe it wasn't that big in New York or Philadelphia or, you know. But, man, number six.
Mostly and as I said, even.
I obviously know this song, but I don't.
Finding clues for this was even a hard thing to do. So.
What kind of big hit was mostly? I mean, I'm going to feel like an idiot when I don't get it, but I don't know.
All right, let's move on to clue number three for 3 points. This would give you exactly 20 if you got it based on this clue. Okay. But radio DJs played the B-side more than the A-side, which allowed the single to reach number two in the pop charts.
Oh, so wait a minute. Is the B-side the big hit and the song you're talking about is not the hit?
No, the song I'm talking about is the hit, but the radio DJs played the B-side overall more than the A-side, and it made the single number six overall.
Don't necessarily have to tell me this, but is the B-side considered a big hit also?
No.
All right.
No.
Son of a bitch. I'm sure there are people out there just screaming, David, what?
Maybe not. I don't think so. I think if the audience was playing along with us, they'd be like, what is this?
No, they shouldn't be, because obviously it's a huge hit. Even if it was, let me see. That B-side, I have to go back to the spoken word thing, because why can't I think of a mostly spoken word song from seven? Wait a minute. Hold on. No, that's not 70. That's not 72. I was thinking of, for some reason, I was thinking of Rollin' on the River by Ike and Tina Turner. But no. That's 71.
There's no shame in not getting this. You've already blown.
Yeah, I know, but I feel all right. Well, I don't know it. We'll have to go to clue four.
Let's go to question number four for 2 points. And this is not going to help you, this clue, because as I said, it was difficult finding clues. But this song has been sampled in various hip hop and R&B songs over the years.
Well, it's definitely not going to help because I don't listen to hip hop much. But do I know of a song that's been sampled? 1970.
72 is that weird year.
It's not weird for me. I mean, I certainly know of all the hard hits very well, but for some strange reason, this one's not coming to me. Well, It must be something like, well, it's got to be something like the Candyman. No, I know it's not that.
Shoot.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
The only thing I can get you with clue number five for one.
I haven't been shut out yet, but maybe I will now.
It was featured on the soundtrack of Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
Fuck, I never saw the movie. Oh my God. I'm going to get a zero, but at least I got 17.
You got 17. I mean, like I said, you could skate right along and you still.
I know, but man, what a way to finish. I feel like a guy trying to break up a no hitter and striking out. Wow. What label was? I mean, I got zero. So
what label was it on? Dial.
Oh, fuck. It's I Got You by Joe Tex. Give me what you promised me. Oh my God. I didn't think about it spoken because
he's. Oh. Yeah, but.
Why couldn't you have had the label as one of the clues? If that was the first clue, I'd have gotten it immediately.
Because I know you, and had I said the label, you probably would have honed in on that. Was the only clue I probably couldn't give you, and you would have you would have honed in on it. But
yeah, because there weren't exactly a lot of big hits on Dial.
No, that's what I figured. Dial would have probably told you something immediately. But am I not wrong in thinking that? To say it's number six overall in 1972.
It was a big hit in New York. It probably I don't know for sure, but I think on WABC's top 100 of 72, it finished somewhere in the low 30s. So it was a very big hit. The other thing I remember about I Gotcha was it used to crack my mother up. She did not like rock and roll or AM top 40. You know, she was more into Andy Williams and Glenn Campbell and, you know, Cher. And yeah, longevity was definitely part of why it was that big. But
and that's the reason these Hot 100s, like if something comes in at number six, that doesn't mean it was number one for a long time, but it might have been on the charts, you know, hanging around for a very long time.
There's a song from 1974 that's exactly like that. And I'm not going to mention it because it may end up being... I believe it finished number two for that year, and it never got higher than like number 20 something, but it was on the charts for like 38 forever. Weeks. Yeah. Some people may know what that is just from those clues, but that one, I mean, yeah.
Nothing to be ashamed of, David.
I'm not ashamed. We did not stump you. Yeah, you did.
We did not stump the bash overall.
Oh, you stumped the bash, but you stumped me on
17 points.
It depends on the clues. You ask somebody else who's maybe a little bit more of an overall musicologist who knows rap real well, and they would have gotten it on that clue. Or certainly the Reservoir Dogs would probably have been very easy for most people. I just never saw it. But I'm not a huge Tarantino guy.
Didn't we entertain everybody as they learned some background information on these top hits throughout 65 and 75?
I think we did. That's the fun of it all. Yeah. I see that people seem to be hanging around. So.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. When I put these things together, I am fascinated at some of the information. Here we go. I know a lot of 1972. That's exactly what I said.
I didn't think when you said spoken word, that should have been the clue. But I was thinking more of a more solemn thing, like maybe like Desiderata by Les Train, which was a big hit the previous year. I was thinking, what the hell? And then, of course, I was thinking of maybe Ike and Tina with their version of Proud Mary. I called it Rolling on the River. with their version of Proud Mary. I was thinking of something like that. I didn't think of something where, you know, where the guy's being silly and playful, like Joe Tex was. But yeah, my mom didn't like rock and roll at all. And when we turned on, you know, WABC, she generally didn't want to listen. Thank you. But she, that was one song that just kept, oh, girl, and what about the Shy Lights and Bill Withers? What about them? They are both in 72. I know that. Fire by the Ohio Players. That ain't 72.
Well, we're bringing back a lot of memories, though.
Yeah. Come and get these memories.
Well, my friend, you got you hit two out of the park. You got two fives, a four, and a three. So very good performance tonight on Stump the Badge.
Not too bad at all. But I'm not that ashamed of the zero, because those are clues that really, in retrospect, wouldn't have given it to me, because again, I wasn't thinking about a playful talk. I was thinking about a solemn talk.
Yeah, of all the songs I think you could have picked from all these years, that was probably, well, there was one other one that I thought was pretty tough. That was probably the toughest one.
All right, but I mean, if you had said Dial Records, that might have given it, that would have definitely given it to me, obviously, and I might have given it to some other people, because there were so few records on that label that charted.
Because we're not going to have number six anymore. Do you want to try a bonus question?
Why not?
Let's try a bonus question.
Let's go with 1974. And that means that I will have used every year.
Let me find 1974 here. Of course, all my papers. Oh, there we are. Ooh, well.
Another tough one?
No. I think you'll get this one fairly quickly.
Not pressure.
Okay. I'm just saying. All right, bonus question. 1974 charted number six year-end Billboard Hot 100. This song, originally written in 1962 by Goffin and King for D.D. Sharp, but Sharp turned it down.
Huh. Goffin and King, but Sharp turned it down. Goffin and King song from 74. Wait, what's the matter with really? Bad time. Oh, no, that was 75. Then I'm going to have to say The Locomotion by Grand Funk Railroad.
Isn't that funny? We had back-to-back Grand Funk Railroads. You are correct. The Locomotion, Grand Funk Railroad. Clue number two, I think, would have knocked it right in. Reached the American top three times in three different decades by three different artists. Little Ava, Grand Funk, and Kylie Minogue.
Well, the Kylie Minogue, I wouldn't have been able to recall that. I know it now that you said it. You know who did a great, to me anyway, did a great version of The Locomotion? Dave Stewart and Barbara Gaskin.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
There you go. But
I think that would have gotten it for you. Clue number three, it is an enduring example of the dance song genre, where much of the lyric is devoted to a description of the dance itself.
I think I would have gotten that.
Produced by Todd Rundgren, the song featured heavy guitars, heavy drums, and layered vocals. That was a throwaway. And in the 2004 edition of the Rolling Stone album guide, Village Voice media critic Nick Cartucci called the cover embarrassing.
I don't know I'm not sure that would have given it to me.
You would not have even gotten to those clues. That's why those clues were there, because I figured after clue number two, easily done.
But fortunately, I got clue number one.
The bonus hits it out of the park with a five. Congratulations.
I admit that it probably helped that Grand Funk was the answer to another one.
Yeah. Well, we've discussed three Grand Funk songs tonight, you know? So, you know.
Is Lisa Michaels listening? If you are, Lisa, identify yourself, because we'll end with a tune that I know you love from this compilation that I got, and we'll have to wait till another time if you're not here. Here it is. Happy in Hollywood. These are productions by Gary Usher. Mostly 60s, but a few from 70s and 80s. He was an amazing producer and a great, great songwriter, especially for the Beach Boys. So there's one song on here that I know Lisa loves. And we'll find out why I know she loves it if she's here, but apparently not because she's not saying anything.
Yeah, she's usually quick to say hi.
So yes, she is. She's so somewhere else tonight, here, but we'll do it another time. But the next two episodes, we will not be doing any Stump the Bash because we will have some guests. Take it away, Mark.
Well, who do we got? Yeah, August 17th, we've got Rex and Christina from Big Stir. The label, wonderful label, the magazine, the musicians, everything about these two speaks volumes of the power pop scene of now.
They've done a great job in signing artists and releasing their albums and putting out compilations. Featuring even more artists who may not have albums.
Just amazing.
They've done a wonderful job of just kind of galvanizing the worldwide pop scene. And it'll be fun to have them on.
It's going to be great.
The following week, we have might be our most controversial guest, depending on what he decides to talk about. But we will have the writer for Rolling Stone, the author, musician, John Mendelsohn will be on the 24th. I want to thank Stacy Alexander, who's a mutual friend of ours, for connecting us in that way. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what John Mendelsohn we get. We could get banned from the airwaves, or we could get a more genteel.
Either way, it's gonna be fantastic. So
yeah, I'm very much
we've got
for that and everything.
We've got
else.
Great guests in the next 2 weeks. After that, we've got a lot of irons, as we always say. We've always got irons in the fire. It's a matter of just getting people's schedules and whatnot. So if you haven't joined us, the group here on Facebook, or if you haven't subscribed on YouTube, make sure you do that and let everybody know, because you'll get that notification a couple days ahead of time of what's happening on Wednesday and who we're going to talk to. So, do that. Subscribe. We have a great time with this.
We do. And we apologize again for overextending ourselves. It's like 17 minutes past the bewitching hour. But hey, if you enjoyed it, then we're very glad we did. And we thank you so much for tuning in and sticking with us. We really do.
Well, everybody have a great night. We will see you next Wednesday with Rex and Christina from Big Stir.
Absolutely. Everyone, thanks again. Mark, always a pleasure, of course. And thank you, Andy. And we'll do it again.
It's Marvin, your cousin, Marvin Berry. Have a great night, everybody.
Yes, definitely. Thanks so much.
Good night, David. Good night, fading. Man.